It is a busy week ahead of that New York City mayoral election and amid a new push for voting rights legislation in Washington. Here to analyze that and more are Tamara Keith of NPR and Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report. And you are in person, and we are so glad to have you back in the studio, both of you. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Here.
Very good to have you here. And as we just heard from Hari Srinivasan's report, Amy, hot mayor's race, right. Biggest city in the country. A lot of candidates running. Crime, the police are on the agenda. What does it look like to you?
Yeah, you know, Democrats, there's been this sort of intra-party tension here between, in the wake of the killing of George Floyd, the calls for racial reckoning, for police reform. And then on the other side within the party, there's also the sort of flashback to the 2020 election, with many, especially moderate Democrats, arguing that calls to defund the police actually cost them seats in Congress. So at the national level, you feel that pull, and you're feeling it in New York as well. As Hari pointed out, the more progressive candidate who's leading the other progressives, at least in the polling, is Maya Wiley, is the highest level proponent of defunding, or shifting funding, as she says. But the other three candidates are much more moderate on this issue. Look, New York is very different. We can't use it as a microcosm for any other city, but it may tell us something, at least, about this tension. And of course, the mayor of New York City always gets under the microscope, and they become sort of a stand-in for the Democratic Party writ large.
And as Amy's saying, Tam, it's clearly not a microcosm for the entire country, but it's also not the expected sort of liberal bastion that a lot of people think it is.
Certainly. And it's also going to be a testing ground for this ranked choice voting, which may or may not help proponents of ranked choice voting convince everyone else that it's a great idea. Maine did ranked choice voting. Maine is much smaller than New York City, it turns out. The number of people who will be trying this out. Back in November, we talked about the need for patience to know the results of the election. This could require even more patience.
And yeah. Amy, they are saying that people are going to have to be more engaged. They're going to have to pay closer attention and think about the vote. Maybe you do want to pick out more than one person.
That's right. I mean, the theory behind it is a good one, which is it makes it more important for candidates to build broad coalitions, to not engage in negative campaigning, right? If I attack Tam, then and you like her, then you see me doing that, you're not going to vote for me.
The bank shot.
So you want, right. Yeah. So you want to have as broad of a coalition. It also means that people of a very narrow constituency in a race as crowded as this one could win just by turning all of their voters out. Now you have to be very cognizant of who the second and third choice. But we're going to find out, as Tam said, there are going to be some challenges in counting those votes. And I think we're also going to see, you're supposed to rank your top five choices. I think most
that's
a lot of choices. I don't have a top five in almost anything in my life. So that's the thought of being able to do that for candidates. That's challenging.
And Tam, I mean, people will be looking at these results, as you just said, to decide whether this is something they want to try right. in different parts of the country.
Yeah, and we are going to have ranked choice voting in Alaska also, or in a more open primary in Alaska. There are lots of thoughts about changing the way we vote, but these things don't happen quickly, and we will see how this goes, I guess.
Right. And speaking
this
of
isn't pizza.
Speaking of voting, Amy, there is a test vote coming up the United States Senate tomorrow on so-called SR1. This is the big Democratic Party bill to institute changes in the election law around the country. It's a test vote, but what are you looking for tomorrow?
Well, I think what folks are looking for is, one, is Joe Manchin going to support actually having a vote on a vote, right? So, which it seems that is something that he would support. The bigger question is, would he support the bill? But we're probably not going to get to a vote on the bill. Overall, here's what we know. We have a voting rights bill that there's nowhere close to getting 60 votes, which means it will be filibustered, which means we're not going to see a national voting rights bill happen. I think for Democrats who are concerned about this, their energy should be going much less into trying to figure out how to overcome this, overcome Manchin's dislike of getting rid of the filibuster and focus on electing Democrats in state legislatures, electing Democrats as governors who have much more sway and impact on state voting laws.
But it's gotten very messy, Tam, has it not, in the process of trying to get something done?
Certainly it has, and Manchin has talked about, well, he has a compromise proposal that is less than H.R. 1, and then Republicans immediately dismissed that out of hand. Well, the Democrats, including Stacey Abrams, who's this high-profile voting rights advocate, supported what Manchin came up with. You know, broader than that, voting rights has become a battlefield. Fighting about voting is the 2021 answer to what to fight about, or at least one of them. And for Republicans, these bills to crack down on what they claim is voter fraud, though there has been basically no evidence of widespread voter fraud anywhere. This has become a cause for them. And for Democrats who don't have much ability to push back on it at the state level, where legislatures are controlled by Republicans in these states, it is becoming a campaign issue for them. This is going to be something that galvanizes Democratic voters. It's certainly something that in Georgia galvanized Democratic voters and ultimately helped them win those two Senate seats.
Virtually an existential issue.
Right.
Democrats are painting it that way. Amy,
yes.
And for the White House, for President Biden, it's become bigger and bigger, and part of a bundle, one of the bundle of issues that have become important for him. Another one's infrastructure,
right,
and jobs.
And going back and forth on, will he get a bipartisan deal, which it looks now there is more hope than ever about a bipartisan deal coming together. But as we know, in a 50-50 Senate, right, all it takes is one senator from your own side to go, I'm not so crazy about this. And we saw Bernie Sanders over the weekend say, look, I'm not against this infrastructure plan. I just don't get how it's getting paid for. And if it's getting paid for by user fees, private partnerships, that, you know, or private funding for these roads and things like that, I'm not okay with that. So we are likely looking at, well, you may placate moderates over here, you're upsetting progressives over there.
And we may learn more about that.
We may learn more this week.
In coming days. So, Tam, you cover the White House. This is a president who doesn't have a shortage of challenges on his plate. Just back from this trip overseas, he's got the things that we've been talking about. Also, having the White House now having to acknowledge they're not going to make their target when it comes to getting Americans vaccinated.
All of a sudden, they are not talking about the goal of 70% of adults getting their first dose by July 4th. And instead, they're sort of moving the goalposts and saying, well, it was sort of arbitrary. It was about getting back to normal. Well, guess what? Things are back to normal, but they're also not hitting the 70% goal. And in some states, it's way, way, way off. In some states, the number of people vaccinated is just incredibly low. And I was talking to a hospital director in Missouri today who has his staff going through contingencies for another possible surge because 40% of his staff aren't vaccinated and 60% of his community aren't vaccinated. Mm. And they're just worried about what might happen with these variants. So there is a situation where, as a country, divided in so many ways. And when it comes to vaccination, that divide is there too. And potentially, if these variants become a problem, there could be a divide between places where people are fine living their lives and places where people are clogging hospitals and people are dying again.
It is disturbing to hear you quote them as saying they're worried about another surge. I mean, we all like to think, oh, well, so many Americans are vaccinated. But this is becoming more and more of an issue.
This is more and more of an issue in that, as Tam pointed out, it's now a red state, blue state issue and divide. I mean, there are many other reasons for differences between who's vaccinated and who's not, and access, and skepticism, et cetera. But really, at its core, the blue states are the ones who are leading the way on vaccinations, and the red states are falling very much back. And if that also impacts not just what the hospitals look like, but what their economies could look like going forward.
And the president trying to use his persuasive powers, but in the red states, there's a limit.
There is a limit.
How far that will go.
Yes.
There's no limit, though, to how happy we are that you are back. Tamara Keith, Amy Walter, thank you.
You're welcome.
Glad to be here.